Engineer Hugh Cooper seemed to understand the significance of this project. He had writers sending articles to magazines and newspapers throughout the country, and he hired a local photographer to document the entire construction process.
And he started January 8th of 1910. He got a picture of 10 men with shovels digging a trench, and that was what they started.
That's Mike Foley with the planning committee for the 100th anniversary celebration.
They didn't have any kind of machinery at all. So what they brought in next were horses and mules with kind of a very large scoop shovel. They would scoop the dirt away. What they were trying to do was to get down to raw rock.
The dam's foundation was eventually anchored to the exposed rock. Foley says year one was devoted to site preparation, so workers had everything necessary to build the dam, including rock crushers, cement mixers, and bunkhouses. He says the first half of 1911 was also spent on dry land, building one-third of the dam. The river was not as wide or deep as it is today, so the work took place in a cornfield. Everything changed later that year as they reached the shoreline of the Mississippi River. Foley says crews built and installed large wooden cofferdams, which were filled with rock to hold back the Mississippi River while they worked.
And then they would pump out the water, and once they'd gotten it dry, then they could dig down until they got the rock to the exact place, many times having to drill holes and put dynamite in and blow it up until they had it to the level that they wanted so they could pour foundations.
Foley says Cooper's workers could build the cofferdams quickly, as most of them worked with him at Niagara Falls.
One of our most exciting pictures that we have in the exhibit is men working with water rushing underneath their feet, and they're trying to get the last of the cribs in place.
There were definitely challenges along the way, including severe flooding in 1912. Foley says based on the photographs he has reviewed, it appears the river reached the same level in 1912 as it did during the record-setting flood of 1993.
They really thought they were going to lose the cofferdam, and they had put some dynamite in place. They were going to purposely blow up a small section, so therefore they wouldn't lose the whole cofferdam.
Foley says there was even one night where hundreds of men raced from the bunkhouses to the construction site with shovels and sandbags to protect the cofferdams. He says had they been lost, it could have taken another year for construction to be completed. There was also tragedy along the way, as several dozen workers died as a result of accidents occurring during construction. Despite that, work continued until 1913, when the dam was completed. Foley says one of the ways Cooper was able to bring the project in on time and under budget was because of the innovations he implemented. One would think trial and error would have been heavily involved.
Except that it was very cemented in Cooper. That's why he was such a genius. He could picture that this is how it had to be built. So there wasn't very much trial and error because he didn't have time for that.
Foley points to the use of the largest cranes in the world at the time to pour concrete and the fact that Cooper used an on-time delivery method to save storage space. He also believes Cooper created a new tool for use in building the cofferdams.
In all the other pictures, there was a crew of sledgehammers driving these rods down in. When I get down to the last picture of the last crib, there's no sledgehammers. And I looked around, and I see this big thing on the lane there, and I believe that was the first jackhammer.
All of these firsts led to the first dam being built across the Mississippi River. Part 3 of Damming the Mighty Mississippi will look at how the dam and the nearby power plant, which Cooper also built, operate on a daily basis. I'm Jason Parrott.